Welcome to the deep dive. You know, when you look up at the night sky, it might seem, well, pretty uniform.
Yeah, at first glance, maybe.
But when you zoom out, way, way out, we see a universe that's anything but smooth. From planets huddling around stars to galaxies bunching
And
together.
clusters, yeah, and even those clusters forming massive superclusters.
Exactly. The cosmos has this definite large-scale structure. It's, well, lumpy. And the big question we're tackling today is how this incredible architecture actually came to be.
What's truly mind-boggling, I think, is just the sheer scale of this cosmic web. These structures aren't just, local neighborhoods.
Right.
They extend across a significant chunk of the observable universe. So figuring out the mechanisms that sculpted this intricate pattern from the very early universe,
Yeah.
that's a huge challenge in cosmology.
Okay, let's unpack how scientists have tried to get a handle on this for like smaller scale stuff, how dust clouds collapse into stars, or how galaxies themselves form. The traditional approach often involves something called Newtonian diffusion theory. You've probably heard of diffusion in other contexts, like heat spreading out.
Exactly. Newtonian diffusion is, well, it's a powerful tool when you're dealing with gravity acting over relatively shorter distances and timescales.
Yeah.
It's a bit like you said, a drop of ink spreading out in water.
But here's where things get really interesting. When we're talking about the largest structures in the universe, the ones that, coalesce from the super hot, super dense early universe,
Yeah, that's a different ballgame.
that simpler diffusion model starts to break down. We need a more sophisticated way of looking at things.
That's right. The early universe was just a much more dynamic, energetic environment than what Newtonian diffusion can really capture easily. This led scientists, people like Zeldovich, to develop a different approach, a hydrodynamic one,
Okay.
based on what's known as Berger's equation.
Berger's equation, huh? Sounds like lunch. But it's actually a key mathematical tool here. It helps describe how the velocity of all that matter evolved. Under gravity, that's one part, but also considering a kind of cosmic friction, like a very, very subtle resistance to the flow.
And importantly, Berger's equation isn't the whole picture. Alongside it, you've got the continuity equation,
Right.
which is fundamental. It basically just says matter doesn't pop in or out of existence, it just moves around. So this equation governs the density of matter as the universe evolves.
So we've got these two powerful equations trying to explain this vast cosmic web. But there's a fundamental hurdle, isn't there? We don't actually know the precise initial conditions.
Exactly. The exact velocity, the density everywhere, the initial gravitational pull, these were likely, random across space.
This raises a crucial question then. If we don't have a perfect picture of the starting point, how can we possibly predict the structure we see today?
Well, the hope is that the long-term behavior, the asymptotics, might become less dependent on those exact initial random details. It's sort of like how the overall shape of a river valley might not depend on exactly where every single pebble was at the source.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, here's a really clever trick that was developed. The Hopf substitution. Sounds fancy.
It is pretty clever, yeah.
It's a mathematical technique that apparently makes a huge difference. It takes that complicated non-linear Berger's equation and transforms it into something much simpler, a linear equation related to the heat equation, maybe?
Yeah, related to the heat equation. And what's so insightful is that this transformation essentially unlocks the ability to actually solve these complex equations. In a sense, it gives us a way to write down the velocity field mathematically.
An explicit solution, they call it.
Right. And this solution involves the initial gravitational potential and a mathematical function called a Gaussian kernel. Think of it like a smoother, blurring out the initial small-scale details over time and distance.
Okay, so we have this mathematical solution for how the velocity evolves. Now, the big question is,
Yeah.
what happens to this velocity field way, way down the line as time stretches on? The asymptotics.
Exactly, the long-term behavior. And it turns out it depends a lot on the nature of those initial random fluctuations we talked about earlier.
Right.
The ultimate fate of the universe's large-scale structure, at least in this model, is deeply tied to the statistical properties of how lumpy things were right at the beginning.
So let's dive into the first possibility, the Gaussian scenario. This comes up when those initial fluctuations were relatively mild, not too extreme, mathematically, something about exponential moments existing.
That's the idea. In this weak fluctuation scenario, scientists often use a couple of basic models for that initial lumpiness. First, the Gaussian model itself.
Okay.
Picture this, a random field where at any point the density or velocity was slightly different from average, but these differences follow that familiar bell curve. And importantly, points closer together had more similar fluctuations, and this similarity faded with distance. We usually assume some smoothness there, mathematically.
And you mentioned there's another model, shot noise, we'll get to later. But sticking with Gaussian for now, how do scientists use this to predict the distant future?
Well, mathematically, we can calculate things called moments of the solution. These tell us about, say, the average velocity, and how the velocity at one point is statistically related to the velocity somewhere else, the covariance.
And this is where it gets a bit more nuanced, right? Depending on how quickly that initial similarity fades with distance, you mentioned a factor, alpha.
Precisely. If that alpha value is greater than 3, it means the initial fluctuations were weakly dependent over distance. If alpha is between 0 and 3, they were strongly dependent. The case alpha equals 3 is tricky, so we probably won't dig into that today.
Okay, so what happens in that weakly dependent case, alpha bigger than 3? What's the long-term outlook?
Here, a powerful mathematical idea, the central limit theorem, comes into play. Essentially, if you look at the velocity field in a specific way, it's called renormalization. It tends to become a uniform, isotropic Gaussian random field. Zero average. The key thing is the correlations between velocities settle down to a specific pattern determined by those initial correlations. It becomes, in a sense, a more standardized Gaussian field.
And what if you look at this evolving in both space and time, not just a snapshot?
Then the random field, when you adjust your view of space and time in a certain way, rescaling it, converges to another Gaussian field. This limiting field can even be described using something called white noise.
Like random static.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Completely random. No correlations across space or time in that limit.
So going back to the actual movement of matter, how does this math translate into what the universe might look like?
Well, because the velocity is mathematically linked to the gradient, the spatial change of our solution.
Right.
And part of the equation simplifies over time. The long-term statistics of the velocity field can be figured out from this limiting Gaussian field. Essentially, a rescaled version of the velocity itself also converges to a Gaussian field.
Okay, that's for the velocity. What about the density, how the matter's spread out, that continuity equation?
Yeah, the general idea, though it's still quite challenging to prove rigorously, is that the density of matter might become more uniform over vast scales as time goes on, maybe just small, random Gaussian fluctuations left. And the large-scale motions, the velocity, might even slow down, kind of stop, with any remaining large fluctuations becoming very gentle.
Interesting. So weak initial fluctuations lead towards a smoothed out state. Now, what about that other case, alpha between 0 and 3? Stronger initial dependencies.
In that case, the long-term statistics can be understood using some more advanced math. Interestingly, even with these stronger initial connections, the eventual behavior is still Gaussian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but the way we need to rescale things, adjust our perspective to see that Gaussian behavior is different. It's a slower adjustment.
So even if the initial lumpiness was more pronounced and interconnected, these basic Gaussian models still point towards a future that looks statistically Gaussian in terms of velocity.
For these fundamental Gaussian models, yes, that's generally the trend. But there are more complex scenarios. Even starting Gaussian can lead to non-Gaussian later on if, say, the initial correlations oscillate weirdly. Or if the initial field is like the square of a Gaussian field. There's this concept, Hermite rank, that helps figure out when that might happen. Also, even if the initial fluctuations weren't the same in all directions anisotropic, the velocity can still end up at Gaussian eventually.
It sounds like physicists have also tried exploring this in simpler, maybe 1D versions, even if the math is tough.
That's true. There's been work trying to get more concrete results in those simpler settings, but often the mathematical rigor is, well, limited. One issue with these basic Gaussian models is they don't really have a built-in sense of scale.
Like everything's fluctuating at all possible sizes at once, sort of.
Essentially, yeah. Now, think about a more realistic picture. What if the initial fluctuations weren't just one Gaussian field? What if you had stuff happening at different scales? Imagine adding, say, a random field with really large amplitudes that varies slowly over huge distances on top of our underlying Gaussian field. This could represent maybe very large-scale density variations early on.
That sounds like it could lead to a much richer evolution than just smoothing out.
It could, yes. Depending on how the timescale of these large fluctuations compares to the overall evolution, you might see interesting transitions. Very, very long term, maybe the averaging still wins.
That's a Gaussian.
Possibly. But at intermediate times, the influence of these large-scale, high-amplitude fluctuations could be really significant. It could potentially lead to something called intermittency.
Intermittency.
Yeah, where you have rare extreme events that dominate the overall behavior. Properly putting these multiple scales in and understanding intermittency rigorously, that's still a big open question.
Okay, that gives us a good picture of the Gaussian scenario. Now, let's switch gears to the shot noise model. You said this is often seen as more versatile. Why is that?
Well, the shot noise model is very flexible for representing a random field built from many localized independent bits. Think of it like sprinkling points randomly through space, like a Poisson process.
Okay.
And at each point, there's a source contributing to the overall field with a random strength, a random size or scale.
So instead of continuous waves, it's more like the universe was seeded with these little individual pops or events.
Precisely. And under pretty mild conditions on how those strengths and sizes are distributed, the math works out. The series converges, you get a stationary differentiable random field. We even have formulas for its statistical properties, like its characteristic function.
And you can get expressions for the average value, the correlations, and even the average of the exponential of this field.
Yes, those depend on the shape of that basic source, the unit potential, and the statistics of the amplitudes and scales. Just like the Gaussian case, the overall strength depends on those parameters.
So if the fluctuations in this shot noise model are low, extreme events are rare, not too huge, what kind of long-term behavior do we expect? Similar to Gaussian.
Interestingly, yes. We can mathematically prove results similar in spirit to the Gaussian scenario. The math details are often more complex, but we still see that tendency towards a more uniform state under these low fluctuation conditions.
You mentioned a specific theorem supporting this.
Yes, there's work showing that for a shot noise model where the sources drop off quickly and extreme events are rare enough, if a certain condition is met, then you get that same long-term Gaussian behavior for the velocity field, maybe with a slightly different constant factor.
How do they prove that, roughly?
It involves approximating the complex shot noise field with a simpler version and then carefully taking limits, looking at large scales and long times.
And there was another theorem for sources with a power law shape.
Correct. Under specific mathematical constraints on the randomness in that case, you can recover the same kind of long-term self-similar Gaussian behavior we saw for the Gaussian model with long-range correlations. The proof there uses a different technique, approximating a related exponential field.
So it seems under certain conditions, both models can lead to a universe becoming statistically Gaussian over long timescales. But you hinted the shot noise model could do more.
Absolutely. We can make it more complex. What if the rate those sources appear is inconstant? What if it changes across space, maybe periodically or even randomly?
Okay.
In the random rate case, these are called Cox processes, you can actually get non-Gaussian long-term behavior, especially if the randomness in the rate itself has long-range correlations. We can even extend this to other statistical setups.
So the shot noise model's flexibility allows for a wider range of possible futures. But you really wanted to discuss when the initial fluctuations are strong in this model.
Yes. This is where things get particularly relevant for understanding the structured universe we actually see. We're talking about situations where extreme initial fluctuations are, well, not just possible, but quite likely, even if the average is okay. This strong fluctuation scenario is key for exploring how the cosmic web, the galaxies and voids, might have formed.
Okay, so milder fluctuations might lead to smoothing out. Now let's get into the strong fluctuations and how they might lead to these intermittent structures. What kind of shot noise model helps here?
To model these strong fluctuations effectively, we can look at a simplified sort of degenerate shot noise model.
Wow.
Imagine that fundamental source having zero range. It's all concentrated at a single point.
Okay.
Effectively, this makes a key quantity related to our random field become just a sum of infinitely sharp spikes, delta functions, located at the random Poisson points, each with a random height or amplitude.
So really localized, intense peaks in the early universe instead of spread out bumps.
Exactly. And in this model, the velocity field can then be expressed as a sum involving the derivative of that Gaussian smoother we mentioned, weighted by these random amplitudes at each spike location.
And what happens to the long-term statistics of this velocity field now with these strong, localized initial fluctuations?
Well, if the average amplitude and the average squared amplitude are finite, the long-term distribution is still Gaussian.
Still Gaussian.
Surprisingly, yes.
Yep.
But if the distribution of those amplitudes has a heavy tail, meaning very large amplitudes are more likely than you'd expect from a Gaussian,
okay,
then we can see different kinds of stable limit laws emerge, not just the Gaussian one.
But the really interesting case for structure formation is when even those average measures, like exponential moments, blow up, when extremes really dominate.
That's right. Let's say the probability of an amplitude being extremely large decays very, very slowly. In this case, a key result tells us the velocity at a point doesn't head towards some smooth average. Instead, it becomes dominated by one specific initial spike.
Just one.
Essentially, yes. The one that happens to be hottest when smoothed out by that time-dependent Gaussian kernel. The velocity basically points away from this single hottest spot nearby.
So the whole velocity field is being driven by these super rare, super intense initial spikes.
Precisely. And there's a mathematical principle at play. When you have a sum where individual terms can be enormous with a certain probability, the whole sum is often dominated by just the single largest term.
And there's math to back this up, showing other large fluctuations become less important.
Yes. There's work showing that the probability of any other initial fluctuation being significantly larger than this dominant one, once you factor in the smoothing effect and the distance, becomes vanishingly small as time goes on.
Wow.
It really reinforces the idea that the long-term behavior is dictated by this single most influential initial spike in the vicinity.
Okay, so this is a radically different picture from the smoothing out scenario. Here, the extreme lumpiness creates persistent structures. What are the main differences in how the velocity behaves long-term in these two regimes, weak versus strong?
The most significant difference is the rate of change. In the strong fluctuation regime, the velocity can decay much, much more slowly than in the Gaussian case. Under some conditions, it might even grow for a while.
Grow?
Yeah. It suggests a universe that remains dynamic and structured, with matter flowing away from these initial hot spots, rather than just settling down.
And this is where records come in, like record-breaking events, to understand the locations of these dominant spots.
Exactly. To understand how the locations of these most influential initial fluctuations evolve, we can use ideas from record theory. Imagine looking at all those initial random points and their random amplitudes. If you order them somehow, say by distance from you,
okay,
a record happens when you find an amplitude that's bigger than all the previous ones you've encountered in that ordering.
So these record-breaking initial fluctuations are the ones shaping the large-scale structure.
That's the core idea. And mathematically, we can show that the location of that hottest spot, the one dominating the velocity, corresponds to one of these record points. Specifically, the record point that maximizes a combination of its amplitude and the smoothing effect from the Gaussian kernel at that time.
You mentioned a simpler case where the amplitudes follow an exponential distribution allows for more detailed math on these records.
Yes. In that special case, we can actually write down equations describing the distribution of the locations and values of these record breakers. They involve simpler random variables, and we can use powerful tools like the law of the iterated logarithm to understand their long-term behavior.
And these tools let you predict how far away these record points are and how big their amplitudes get as you look further out.
Precisely. And using those results about records, we can then figure out how the location of that single most influential fluctuation, our hottest spot, scales with time.
You gave examples of different statistical tails for the amplitudes and how they lead to different predictions for velocity evolution.
Yes. For instance, if the probability of large amplitudes decays in a certain logarithmic way, the distance to that hottest spot can actually grow with time, potentially quite fast. Other slow decays lead to different growth rates, and this directly impacts how the velocity field behaves.
You also touched on a more speculative idea that transitions between these record breakers might relate to how the universe forms cell-like Voronoi structures.
That's an intriguing thought, yeah. The idea is these dominant spots act like centers, pushing matter away, creating boundaries. As one record is eventually beaten by an even bigger one further out, maybe the pattern of these cells reorganizes. But that needs more rigorous investigation. It's quite speculative still.
So this strong fluctuation scenario paints a picture of a universe where initial extreme lumpiness drives ongoing structure evolution. Very different from the smooth future of the weak models.
Indeed. Yeah. And to make this idea of evolving structures more precise, scientists introduced the concept of T-local maxima.
What are those exactly?
Okay, think of it like this. An initial fluctuation point is a T-local maximum. Its amplitude is significantly larger than its neighbors. But after accounting for how far away the neighbors are and how that distance gets weighted by our time-dependent Gaussian smoother.
So it's a peak that stands out in its local time-blurred neighborhood.
Exactly. It's dominant locally, considering the smoothing effect at time t.
And you can define a whole collection of these t-local maxima scattered through the initial universe.
Yes. And it turns out this collection is mathematically related to the original random distribution of spikes through a process called thinning. Only the initial fluctuations that are dominant enough locally survive this thinning to become T-local maxima.
And a key mathematical result describes the statistics of this collection of local maxima over time.
Exactly. Under certain conditions on the probability tail of the initial fluctuations, this result shows that if you rescale your view of these T-local maxima as time progresses, their statistical distribution converges to a well-understood pattern. It becomes a thinned version of a basic Poisson point process, but with a specific density determined by how those extreme initial fluctuations behave.
You mentioned these conditions relate to max stable distributions. What's the significance?
It essentially means these extreme fluctuations have a specific, predictable kind of limiting behavior when you look at the largest values in bigger and bigger regions. The possible forms of these limits are known, and the kinds of slow decaying tails we discussed earlier fit into this category.
And the proof involves looking at how the density of these local maxima changes.
Yeah, basically. As time goes on, the smoothing emphasizes the truly dominant peaks, and their spatial pattern settles down to this characteristic thinned Poisson process.
It's interesting you noted a rough agreement between how the spacing of these local maxima scales and how the location of the single overall dominant maximum scales.
Yes. That suggests that these two ways of looking at it, the single most extreme event versus the pattern of locally extreme events, give a broadly consistent picture for how structure evolves when driven by strong initial fluctuations. Both scale similarly with time, roughly speaking.
So to bring it all together then, today we've explored two very different potential fates for the universe's large-scale structure. If those initial bumps were relatively mild.
The Gaussian scenario.
Right. The universe might be headed towards a smoother, more uniform state over vast timescales. Kind of boring, maybe.
Haha. Perhaps from a structure perspective, yes. But if the initial fluctuations were strong, with a decent chance of really extreme events.
The shot noise model with heavy tails.
Exactly. Then we see a totally different picture, one characterized by persistent structures, intermittency, driven by these rare, intense initial peaks.
And the crucial factor seems to be the detailed statistics of those initial fluctuations, especially the tail of the distribution, how likely the really big ones were.
Precisely. That tail behavior seems to hold the key. It dictates whether the universe ultimately becomes, well, bland, or remains dynamically interesting and structured.
This leads to a pretty profound final thought, doesn't it? Could the intricate large-scale structure we actually observe today, all those galaxies, clusters, the voids, could it actually be a kind of fossil record, giving us clues about the nature of those fleeting quantum fluctuations way back in the very first moments after the Big Bang?
It's a fascinating possibility, and it's a question that continues to drive a huge amount of research in cosmology today, trying to read those initial conditions from the structure we see now.
An amazing puzzle. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.